It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. We are live in Kansas City from the Racing Boys studio here in lovely little Gladstone. I don't know if anybody knows anything about Kansas City, but Gladstone is a little suburb of Kansas City, and we're right in the middle of it here in Kansas City. We hope that you're having a good day out there. I got to start off. I got to say it, right? As much as I got to be careful because, you know, I've always said on this show, we're not going to talk about politics, right? And we're not going to talk about religion. But I got to say something. I'm a little disturbed after what happened down in Texas yesterday. I'm not going to lie to you. The thought of 19 little 10-year-old kids getting shot to death is just disturbing to me. And I'm just, it's just so painful as a parent to think about the parents down there that that are having to deal with the loss of their kids. So I'm not going to get on a rant or rave about it right now, but let me just tell you, I'm pretty disturbed today. Two teachers lost their life, 19 fourth graders lost their lives yesterday. Pretty disturbing. I don't know about anybody else out there, but it's kind of got me in a wad today. I'm a little upset. I'm just not, I'm probably not going to be myself today, to be honest with you, because I sit here and maybe I'm watching too much news, right? Maybe I'm too entrenched in it right now. I've done nothing but watched all the news channels and everything they're talking about. It's extremely disturbing to me. I don't know how anybody, I just can't get it, right? I don't know how anybody could go in and shoot a bunch of 10-year-olds. It's just too much. It's too much to handle. I just can't believe it. It's too much for me. So I hope that I hope all of our listeners today can help me get through the hour, because as a parent, I can't even imagine anybody calling me and telling me my child had been killed at school. I just can't imagine it. So help me through the day, would you? I need it. It's pretty tough for me right now. So, Austin, how you doing, buddy? I'm sorry to start off the show with such a sad note, but it's disturbing. I can't understand how anybody could do that to a bunch of young kids. It's just too much for me, to be honest with you. Austin, you're like a kid to us here at Racing Boys. How you doing today? Help me out of this ditch, would you?
I'm not too bad. We got to watch midget racing last night.
Yeah,
Millbridge. That was...
What'd you think about that race last night? Does that track remind you a little bit of Port, a little bit?
I guess you could call it Port City. I mean...
Is Port City got longer straightaways than Millbridge?
You know, I think they're actually pretty close.
Yeah,
I'll have to go to Google Earth here after the show and measure it up. There's a tool you can trace around the track and see what size it is. I use it to really determine on the tracks I've never been to for gears to run. But I think the only difference between Port City and Millbridge would probably be less banking at Millbridge. Maybe a little wider than Port City.
Yeah.
But it put on a pretty good show. We got to see a little controversy with some bumpers being used and a lot of pile-ups, but I forgot that it's actually a two-day show and they run tonight, so that should be, you know, even better, and maybe we'll get to see some more fireworks. But
Galvin is a hell of a race car driver, though. I mean, let's face it. How many times did he hit the wall last night?
Too many to count.
I mean, he bounced that right rear off the wall. I don't know how many times.
Yeah.
But it never slowed him down, though.
No, and when I was looking at my race pass to see, you know, who was doing what and what the lineup looked like, I was not surprised to see Gavin Beauchamp on the pole. I mean, he's grown up at Millbridge. He's raced micros there for so many years, and now with being under Kevin Swindell's guidance, it's just made him such a better driver, and he has so many laps that are in, and it's kind of he even said it in his interview, a home field advantage, and
right. That's his home track.
Yeah, and, right. and you know, anybody that can run the top of Millbridge is going to be really good, and you know, all the experience he has in his micro is definitely, you know, rolled over into the midget and showed why he was the best car there last night. I was just, he got very lucky. He didn't either bend a right rear wheel, cut a tire, or knock the rear end out of alignment when he kept smoking the fence, and he even climbed the fence, like on the second or third lap.
It was like he used it as a berm.
Oh, I know.
Like a motorcycle.
I mean,
right?
it might be bigger, buddy, but it's just as fragile as your micro, so just be conservative on how much you use it. But, I mean, he definitely put on a show and showed him how to get around Millbridge.
Well, no doubt about it. Bryant's probably not too happy with him, though, would you think?
I wouldn't be. I mean, some might say it was not Bochelle's fault. Some might say it's Bochelle's fault, but Bryant Wiedemann ran the bottom the entire race.
He ran that same line every time.
Yes, and he might have, you know, you watched the video, he kind of backed up his corner a little bit and it kind of rolled backwards up the track, maybe a half a car length, if that. And, you know, Gavin kind of moved down and was running the slider line. And I think he knew it was going to be hard to get around him. And he kind of saw an opening and get to him. And I think he was just going to try and move him and not really dump him. But it's just kind of the cards fell right. And he just got to his rear bumper. And it was just enough to crash or spin him and, you know, crash about, you know, eight other cars. And I don't know if you noticed it, but if you watch that replay, I'll pull the video up here in a second.
That Larson was involved in that.
Larson
that took
was
him
in
out
it,
of the race,
but
too.
If you look at the bottom of the screen, a crew, an official gets ran over.
No, I didn't see
you
that.
You didn't see that? Let me pull it up real quick.
Oh, you're kidding me. I didn't even catch that. You mean one of the cars that was involved in that massive pileup, somebody got ran over? Huh? Really? No doubt. Well, I didn't see that. You know, I thought with as Austin's trying to look up that video, I thought with three laps to go, that yellow come out. And I thought maybe Zach Dom might have a shot at getting around Gavin. I don't know what anybody else thought, but did anybody else out there think that Zach Dom was going to be able to overtake Gavin there at one point?
All right, you ready for this video?
Yep. Let me look here. All right. So are you putting this up on the screen?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, watch the bottom of the screen.
All right. I'm looking down at the bottom.
So there's the official running.
Oh, he did get hit, didn't he?
It wasn't very hard.
He got center punched.
Yeah, he got back up and walked off. But
oh, my gosh. That could have been a lot worse.
It could have been.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even notice that, Austin. Good eye. So was that who hit him?
I think it was Brent Cruz is the driver that got into him. Let me pull it back up.
Oh, yeah. Look, he's pointing down the track. He's not on the brakes, though, is he? Oh, no, he is. He's on the brakes. Oh, I bet that official was shitting his britches right there.
Oh, I would have been.
Oh, my gosh.
That'll teach him from...
Oh, my God. Don't try to get out there too quick.
No.
That's the message. You know, you see that from time to time, right? You go to these racetracks that have these professional fire crews. And listen, the racetracks that have a professional fire crew out there, they're blessed to have those guys out there, right? I mean, it's always nice to go to a racetrack like a Knoxville or... You know, up at Skagit, wherever you go, wherever they have a full-time fire crew, it's always nice to know that they're there. And in case you get in trouble, they're going to come out and give you a hand.
Yeah, I mean, that's like their name kind of slips by my mind right now, but the ASCS Warrior Region has a full-time fire crew.
Oh, and they're excellent,
yeah,
too, by the way.
They travel with, you know, with the Warrior Region, and then whenever the National Tour kind of gets close, they'll hit their shows. But
those guys are great guys.
They are, and they're friends of the drivers too. So it's all a personal relationship with them, and they're there for your safety, and they understand, you know, what it takes to do their job the right way, and they don't skip out on any preparation for it.
Yeah, well, but there's a message right there when you watch that video.
Yeah.
Don't try to get out there too quick, because that's what he was doing. He was trying to get out to the track too quick, and the wreck wasn't even over yet.
Yeah, he just...
He was moving a little too quick right there.
I think he tried to want to be... He's trying to do a tryout for the Chili Bowl, but He didn't do too well.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about that racetrack? And maybe Port City falls into this category. I don't know if they do it at Sweet Springs or not, but what about, Pete brought up, they need some jersey barriers down on the inside of the turns. Insurance companies would not like that track as it is. What do you think about it? Should they put some jersey barriers down there to keep people off the infield and keep them away from the spectators down in the infield?
Yeah, I mean, so Ferryberry Speedway over there in Illinois, it's a big super late model track. And their hot pit for all the late model cars or teams. Ferryberry over in Illinois.
Yeah.
It's all in the infield. So you got all the crews down there, and they all are all trying to get up close to the track to use their signal sticks. And, I mean, they're probably within 20 feet of the track. And I think it was last year or the year before they went up and put jersey barriers around. And it forced the teams to stand, you know, farther back, and they have something to stand behind. And
at least something between them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to look over and see, you know, I'll try and find a video of it, but I mean, there's been plenty of accidents where, you know, cars have gotten close to teams, and you don't definitely want to see that.
Ethan said the line that Gavin was running for laps and laps made that bound to happen. Because here's the thing, you know, at the beginning of the race, Gavin was just ripping the lip all the way around, right? But as the race went on, he started to enter the corner down in the middle a little bit, and to be honest with you, he almost hit Bryant a couple times before that.
Yes.
Right? So I felt like that there was a possibility that he was going to make some contact with him. I don't know why he moved his line down, because he almost kind of followed him into the corner, right? Instead of trying to rip around him on the outside.
Yeah, I think all he was probably thinking was with how solid the cushion became, and it became almost a secondary wall, that he was just trying to sight into it or stay off of it enough to where it wouldn't throw the nose and climb the wall, because you can enter up on it and have plenty of wheel spin, but it'll still suck you in at some point. So I think he was just trying to create as much momentum as he could to the cushion and then hit it hard enough to where it would get that forward drive off the exit of the corner. And I think, you know, that was probably the reason why he moved down and changed his lineup, and you know, and we all know how that turned out for him.
I don't want to take anything away from Gavin, but did you feel that his apology at the end of the race was sincere? Let me ask you that. Did he go far enough with the apology or not?
No, I don't think he really cares. He won. That's.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, what, 13 or 14 years old? He doesn't really.
Is that all he is?
He's pretty young. And I mean, yeah.
You raced with him in carts. You never raced against him.
I raced Bryant Wiedemann. I didn't race with Gavin Boschel.
Oh, okay.
Wiedemann
a pretty good go-kart racer?
Yeah, Wiedemann was really good.
Yeah.
You know, I think at some point as he kind of matures, he'll understand, and if he's in that position again, to kind of be a little more apologetic about it. But, I mean, that was your teammate you crashed too.
Right.
So, I mean, I didn't really think that he cares too much to really matter. I mean, he's in the best of the best ride, and his way's being paid, and he just won, so.
So, Gavin, and now, let me figure this out for exactly. So Gavin drives for KKM, right?
Yes.
But does Swindell, does he give him help with that team? Is he?
I don't think Kevin helps with the Keith Kins ride.
He doesn't.
Kevin
help.
Just helps with his micro and his sprint car.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I don't know. It was pretty interesting watch last night, though. I mean, I was a little disappointed to see Kyle get taken out, weren't you?
Yeah, Kyle just had one of, you know, typical drivers off night. You know, he just.
Kyle hasn't had a lot of great nights lately.
He just won at Attica.
I get that, but what was he doing prior to that? He wasn't setting the world on fire before that, was he?
No, I mean, he's had good runs.
Yeah.
But you can't go out there and duplicate what he had in 2020.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're trying to hold him up to the standard that he was in 2020 and somewhat of 2021. And, you know, it's not going to be your year every year. So, you kind of, you know, once Kyle starts to kind of come off that high, you'll kind of know where his average is. But, I mean, I think it's just a typical kind of average year for Kyle.
Dylan says, Bryant was going so slow and opening up his entrance so much to hit the bottom on exit. What other line do you do you follow? That's what it says there. But I don't know. I mean, did you see anything different about his line?
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of opening up a little bit, but I mean, you gotta know where.
Listen, we're not bagging on Gavin here, right?
No, we're just talking about
the race, right? There's no chance that we're ripping on anybody here. We're just kind of talking about the race itself and how we saw it, right?
Right. I mean, you also kind of got to know, you know, where who you're racing and where they're racing at. You know, mm-hmm. you can't. If the guy's running the middle and you've been running the middle the entire race behind him and you run him down, you can't run the middle anymore because you're not going to get by him. So
right.
you just kind of have some presence on what's going on around you. And just, I mean, if you see him open his lineup on the bottom, then it's going to kind of force him up. So it's going to abandon you off the middle. So yeah. now you got to go commit to the top or try and, you know, bonsai him on the bottom. It's just, I mean, there's really, with the track being that small, there's not much you can do.
Right.
But I mean, it's just kind of what you get with tight quarters racing.
I want to say what Steve said here. Kyle won the late model race in Charlotte and ran second at Bridgeport recently. Listen, I'm not saying that Kyle Larson is terrible. I'm not saying that by any means. I'm just saying that the quantity of wins hasn't been coming quite the way they did last year, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has years they won 25 right. races or years they won 5 races.
Right, right. Pete said Larson. Hold on a second. That's not the one I wanted to read here. I just read that one. Larson in the work area. Bingo. Silva isn't getting. This is from Austin. Silva isn't getting as much time working on Kyle's stuff. They're running that NARC series with the other car. So do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so I think that's Justin Sanders' his other ride. So there's two 57 cars owned by that Kevin, I'm going to mess his last name. I think it's Oswalski or something.
Yeah.
I probably messed it up, but it's all good.
That's all right. It doesn't matter. I butcher names all the time.
Yeah, so they own two cars. They have a California car, then they have Kyle's car, and Justin Sanders is the California driver, and I believe, like he said, that Paul is the crew chief on both cars. I mean, yeah, they might be learning. He might be losing time on Kyle's car, but he's also probably learning what to do with Justin's car that maybe can be applied to Kyle's car.
Yeah, yeah. He forced everyone else to step up their game. Also, I'm with you, Martin. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think that Kyle Larson is the best driver in the world right now. You're not going to get any argument out of me. I think he's the best going in all forms of motorsports. And I'd love to see him in a Formula One car someday, but I'm not sure that'll ever happen. And I'm not sure we'll ever see him in an Indy car. But I think that if he wants to be known as one of the greatest drivers of all time, he might need to get over there and run one of those cars. At least run the Indianapolis 500, wouldn't you think, Kyle Larson?
Yeah, that's his best bet to get in something reasonable. I mean, F1 is just – there's not enough money he can probably bring to the table to get
– Kirk Busch run 8th his first time.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how Jimmy Johnson does this year. Jimmy was fast in practice, and then – He hit the wall in his qualifying run, so it kind of skewed his time. But, I mean, I think Jimmy can be a contender for this year's 500.
Yeah. And, again, we're not bagging on Kyle here by no means because, again, we think he's one of the best. Where would you rate – if you were to pick a driver you think is the best in the world, you'll probably go Formula One right now, right? Because that's you watch a lot of Formula One.
I mean, you can't – it's going to be kind of hard to cross compare sprint car drivers to Formula One drivers or anybody in Europe to America. It's just the type of racings are just they're so different, and you know you could put a NASCAR guy into an Indy car or not an Indy car, an F1 car,
right?
And he might struggle, and it might be the same for an F1 guy to a NASCAR or a sprint car. So, I mean, it would be hard to try and compare or pick the one that's the best in the world right now.
Yeah. Pete says that was Larson's first midget race since the Chili Bowl and his first time Chad Boat this year. He's still very versatile. Our expectations of him are too high. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
No, I think so. I mean, like I said, I mean, we all kind of compare him to his year in 2020 or his year in 2021 where he won an outrageous amount of races. And, you know, that stops at some point.
Now, do you think it – is there a Formula One driver – listen, Juan Pablo Montoya didn't set the world on fire when he came over to NASCAR, right?
No.
Formula One champion.
He didn't win a championship. He just won
but he
races.
Won races, yes. Though, right?
He was a contender for a championship with Michael Schumacher.
Yeah. He never did win the championship, though.
No.
But listen, I'm not sure that you could take a Formula One driver and put him in a sprint car and let him have a few races, and they would be as good as Kyle Larson. Would you agree with that?
No, I think they would have the grasp of how to drive one down, but... I mean, it would take years of racing.
Learning how to drive a sprint car, right.
To be competitive and the best in one.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's time to take a break. Steve Post, it's Wednesday, right? And we always have the Postman on every Wednesday with us here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. Tomorrow, we're going to have Danny Lorton on from Lucas Oil Speedway. The Show Me 100 is this weekend. Down at Lucas Oil Speedway. That's going to be a big event. Two big events going on down at the lake this weekend, huh, Austin? You got the Lucas Oil ASCS National Tour over at Lake Ozark Speedway. You got the Show Me 100 over at Lucas Oil Speedway. A lot going on down by the lake this weekend.
Can't forget Double X 2 on Sunday.
Oh, and then Double X, they're paying $3,577 to win on Sunday night. It's the Jesse Hockett tribute. And, you're thinking about running over there on Sunday too, aren't you?
Might as well.
You're planning.
I'm driving
on it,
right back right on my way home.
Might as well go over there, right? You've never raced there though, have you?
I've raced a micro there. I haven't raced a sprint car, and everybody's been begging me to go race a sprint car there. So finally lined with my schedule enough to make it happen.
That was a racetrack that Jesse Hockett loved more than any racetrack in the country, Double X Speedway.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
California, Missouri, folks, look it up. It's a little bitty track in the middle of nowhere, and it is a great little venue. So check it out. If you ever get a chance to go to Double X Speedway down in California, Missouri, please take your time to go down there and check that out. They put on some good 360 sprint car racing each and every week down there in California, Missouri. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the Postman, Steve Post, is going to join us here on Mostly Motorsports. And again, it's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, and make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must play getaway. Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9 hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
Cigarport.ca is your go-to online store for exclusive cigars produced from the best quality tobacco in the world.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. I want to remind everybody, I don't know if you've heard about it, we've been talking about it quite a bit here on Mostly Motorsports. The tribute to Ascot Park that used to be in Gardena, California is going on right now at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. You need to get up there. It's going to be going now through October 1st. They're going to have a lot of the cars that raced out at Ascot Park. They're going to have a lot of information about the drivers that drove at Ascot Park as well. They've got posters and all kinds of memorabilia. They're going to have plenty of merchandise out there in the store out in front. So get up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum and check out the tribute to Ascot Park. And I also want to remind everybody, they still have the drawing going on. You can go to SprintCarRaffle.com and have a chance to win a 2022 Triple X chassis. It's a 410 Sprint Car. Folks, even if you're not a Sprint Car owner or a part of a Sprint Car team, you buy the tickets, you win the car, you sell the car, you get a lot of money. That's how it works. So, again, that's at SprintCarRaffle.com. Check it out. It's a 2022 Triple X chassis, a 410 race car. So it's a pretty cool deal what they've got going on up there. They got the Corvette up there as well. I don't know if anybody's ever talked about that Corvette, but it is such a nice car. It's an IMSA car, and you can win that car as well through the raffle. So joining us now on the show is our friend. He visits with us every Wednesday. And Steve, I'm just a little out of sorts today. You know, after the tragic loss of those little kids down there in Texas, it's kind of got me spun out a little bit today. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, I was. You talk about the dynamic of the world. I was in a little slice of heaven called Millbridge Speedway yesterday afternoon. Right. I'm walking around, you know, talking to Keith Coons and talking to Chase Briscoe and, you know, Ben Rhodes. And
yeah.
Millbridge has become a slice of heaven, you know,
right.
And I'm taking pictures and putting some on Twitter and not paying any attention. And then I step aside just to see what some reaction on Twitter is. And then it's like, oh, my gosh, what happened? What happened? Right. And then, you know, then you scroll around and you see it. And, you know, it's just, I can't imagine. And I have a daughter that is going to be a teacher. She's in her, just wrapped up her junior year. She's going to be a senior. And I think about, you know, all those years in elementary school, taking and dropping my kids off to school. And no way on earth did you ever think that you're, you know, dropping them off at school, never to see them again.
That's
crazy. And then to have it, and then you think about all of the kids that were in the school at that time and the horrific memory that they will have. Man, I'll tell you what, Scott, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but boy, it's a rough situation, that's for sure. Very rough situation.
Yeah,
just terrible.
As a father, you can't imagine sending your kid off to school and then never seeing him again. It's just the most painful thing that I could think of, and it's really got me unraveled a little bit here today and last night. Maybe I'm just watching too much of the news, right? Maybe that's the problem. Well, maybe I'm just too entrenched in it.
Well, I think there's something there, and I no way diminish the tragedy that happened in Texas and that sort of thing. But one thing I did about 5 years ago is I stopped watching news on a regular basis. I was the guy. I'd get to a race market, I'd go to the hotel, and the first thing I would do in the room is turn the TV on to news.
Yeah,
you know, and then I'd sit there and it'd be like, what have I done in the last hour? You know, I've seen a host in the middle of the show, of the screen.
Right.
I've seen someone from one side on one side. I've seen someone from the other side.
Right.
I've heard them scream at each other for 7 minutes. And then we go to a commercial and we come back and we do about another topic. And so I have stopped watching news. And again, I think that there is something there. But then I don't want to diminish the tragedy in Texas either, because I mean, that's god awful. I mean, 19 little babies plus two other
teachers.
Adults, I guess that's the last I've heard anyhow.
Yeah.
I mean, just gone. Just done. I mean, just unreal. So just tragic for sure.
Let's talk about better things. Let's talk about what happened at Melbridge last night. What'd you think about Gavin Bushell? At the start of that race, he was wearing that wall out, wasn't he?
Gavin is one of our products from here at Millbridge. He's from Mooresville. He is a kid. His first race was 3 years old in a box stock at Millbridge Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he is one of our products, okay? And one thing I've noticed about Gavin this year particularly is everyone's like, man, he's got bad luck. Man, he's got bad luck. Well, he's got bad luck because he's gotten in the habit of just trying to tear the concrete down.
Yeah.
You know, where there's an art to running a fence,
right?
And even using a wall as an advantage, and he hasn't got the subtleties of it. And it was no more evident than last night. My gosh, there were times when it was just like, dude, that concrete is going to win every time. And quite honestly, a lot of his misfortune this year in the micro has been a right rear tire, right rear suspension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't necessarily think that falls under the category of bad luck when you're beating it off the fence every lap, you know?
Right.
And so last night, whatever Keith Coons put on that car, whether it was the super strong titanium right rear package or whatever it was, he didn't. I had a great perspective last night, Scott. Freddie Query is a legendary super late model driver on asphalt.
I saw
from here. He owned Concord Speedway.
Yeah.
And I sat with Freddie Query, which is like one of my heroes. And
right.
I don't ever get to do this. I mean, it was just so cool. And Freddie looked to me one time and he said, I was always taught to believe that the concrete always wins. Someone needs to teach that kid that.
Yeah. How old is Gavin right now?
He's 14. I think he's 14 years old. 13, 12. 13 years old, he's somewhere in that range. He might even be a preteen,
Right. But you know what I'm thinking? You know, when you're at that age, you're all about elbows up and standing on the gas, right? I mean, listen, and they're financially in the right spot to where they can do that, right? They can run as hard as they want to run, and if they tear up something, it's not a big deal to them, right? But the thing about it is, when he gets about 18, 19 years old, the experience that he's had since he's been a little kid, racing since he was 3 years old, that eventually is going to come around, and he's going to get it eventually, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Because you'll learn that you right now he's going through the bad luck. You'll learn that, you know, there's some bad luck that happens in motorsports, but your luck gets significantly worse when you've got a right rear banging off the fence every lap.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and he'll learn those lessons. And they're at a good spot where they can afford to do it. I mean, they're teamed up. They're driving Keith's car here, but he's teamed up with Kevin Swindell for the micro program. So, yeah. I mean, good equipment and also good mentorship. You know, I mean, you know, I'm fairly confident Kevin is having those conversations with him.
Right.
You know, yeah. and I'm fairly confident, you know, Pete Willoughby and Keith Coons, if you know this continues on, we'll have those conversations as well. So yeah, he's gonna get there. We are watching something. I was talking to one of my buddies up in Millbridge last night. Mm-hmm. We are watching something with Gavin Bochelle and a kid named Brent Cruz, who was there as well,
right.
Won the micro race.
Yep.
We literally I think when you look at teenage prospects, and this is coming from me, but it's coming from some folks in the cup industry and in the midget and sprint car industry.
Yeah.
I think we're looking at two of the top five teenage prospects that are properties of Millbridge, that are products of Millbridge Speedway. We've got, and Gavin's one of them. And that young man will settle down. He won't be wearing out the fence his whole career. And boy, he's still going to have that speed. He's going to figure out how to have that speed without tearing that right rear off.
The one thing you can't teach kids is how to drive fast, right? And I think Gavin is one of those kids that he can drive fast. He just needs to have a little more experience, and he's going to be just fine. What'd you think about that when him and Bryant got together down there? You know, to me, it looked like that Gavin should have just kept ripping the lip, and he would have kept the momentum up, and he would have went around him on the outside. But there towards about the time that he got into the back of Bryant, he started running the middle into the corner. He wasn't ripping the top the way he was, and he was basically following Bryant into the corner. And there was a couple times I thought he was going to hit him before that. But then eventually he ended up hitting him. I don't know why he didn't keep his line and just kind of rip around him on the outside.
Yeah, again, and we're talking a teenage kid here. So,
yeah, experience.
You know, why do my teenage kids, when they were teenagers, do what they did? You know,
right, like
we're looking at it. And I'm with you because there was a couple times before I thought, oh, he's going to get in. And I think in complete honesty, and I'm not, I would not have been surprised if they would not have put Gavin to the back. I mean, I would not have been surprised on that because especially a new series trying to establish, you know, ground rules and boundaries and first night out. So nothing would have surprised me there. And I think Bryant got down in there and Bryant got just a tick crossed up more than he had in previous laps. And unfortunately, Gavin got into the back of him and sent him around. And I agree with you. You know, I wonder why he changed his line. Maybe, you know, we just talked about him not banging the car off from the fence every lap. Maybe he changed his line because it kind of struck him that I'm bouncing this car off the fence every lap. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just one of those things where he got into him. I hated to see that for Brian. I hate to see that with races. I would not have been shocked with any call that was made. In fact, I might have been more shocked that no call was made. You know, and then Gavin goes on to win the race. But he did change his line down there in 3 and 4, which I thought was a little interesting. He was close a couple times before it actually happened.
Yeah. Steve, tell us a little bit about that racetrack, you know, the history of it, and just kind of give us a little background about Millbridge a little bit, because you know we're here in the Midwest, we don't get a chance to get down there and see it very often. Can you kind of give us a little just overall history about that racetrack?
There's a lot of questions from when it was created. People remember it back into the 80s. Okay, so it goes back years and years and years.
Yep.
And in complete honesty, back in that era, it was known for three things, and it was mainly a karting track. But it was known for racing, for drinking, and fighting.
Uh-huh.
And it was rough. It was very, very rough.
Yeah.
And it came into 2010, I think it was, Jeremy Burnett, who's from Fenton, Missouri, actually, his brother Randall is Tyler Reddick's crew chief. he decided to try to promote some mini late model races there. And he had some partners that they did it, and the partnership dissolved, and it ended up being Jeremy and his wife, Ashley. His wife, Ashley, is Nick Hoffman's sister, the modified great, and now running everything. Nick Hoffman, that's his sister, is Ashley. So they're racing people. Jeremy and Ashley are racing people through and through, both from the Missouri, the St. Louis area, actually.
Right.
And so in 2010, I think it was 2010 or 2011, they decided to try to promote some races as a partnership there. And they did outlaw carts and that. And the place was just kind of sitting there. And in 2013, they bought it. So they purchased the racetrack in 2013. And at that time, Scott, it was the outlaw cart movement. You know, we had Cycle Land out in California. We had outlaw carts up in Knoxville. We had outlaw carts, but they never really took off. And then 3 or 4 years ago, at the end of the year, they did a micro showdown, and I think 40 cars showed up in the micros. And the word started to get around, let's try to do that. Let's try to do that. And what the appeal of Millbridge is, one of the appeals of Millbridge is that we run most of our races there on Wednesday nights. There's a Saturday night series, but the big events are on Tuesday and Wednesday night because it's a motorsports community here.
Yeah.
Mooresville is.
Yeah, right.
Well, what happened is they went with micros, and because micros have suspension parts, springs and shocks, where the outlaw carts didn't, everybody in NASCAR was far more comfortable with it. The crew chiefs, the team engineers, the shop foremen, the NASCAR drivers. And this thing has exploded. Last Wednesday night, we had 44 micros here.
Oh, wow.
We couldn't get 10 outlaw carts to save our keister when they made that decision. And it got to the stage where, so it's a micro track. And then what they've done on Tuesday night is they do kids box stocks, and there's 90 kids racing on Tuesday night doing box stocks. And they have just got the place rocking and rolling. I mean, the place is just, and they've spent money. They bought an adjoining lot, and they've quadrupled the pit size. And Jeremy is really good working the racetrack, and they've just built this thing into something really, really special here in our area.
Well, it's good to know that there's some people that are still willing to get into the business, right? Because it's hard to find people right now that want to get into the motorsports business because, to be honest with you, it's high risk, low reward, to be honest with you, right? We know this. I've promoted races. You got to put like $35,000, $40,000 on the line to win $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, right?
Right.
I mean, there's not a lot of money in promoting races, and I don't think people really know that about the motorsports industry, is that the risk is so high and the reward is so low.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
You got to have a rock gut stomach and heart to deal with that.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, I mean, I had an old promoter, and this is years and years ago. This had been the early 1990s. And he looked at me and he said, Steve, and this was to show you how it was. It's not this anymore. He said, Steve, every Friday night, I put $16,000 in a bag and throw it into the wind.
Oh, cool.
He says, that's payroll, purse, everything else.
Right.
He says, I throw it into the wind and hope that $16,001 come in some way, through concession stands, through back gate, and through front gate. I hope that comes in. He was an older guy, and he said, you know what? I figured out with my retirement from my real job and everything else, I could live the rest of my life on $16,000, and every Friday night I'm throwing that up into the wind. That's kind of the start. That's kind of the nature of what it is. You know, I mean,
you throw
it out there, and you hope that plus $1 comes back in the gate when you get done at the end of the night.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're visiting with the postman, Steve Post. His appearance is brought to you by Sage Fruit. We want to thank those guys for allowing Steve to come over here and be our guest every Wednesday on Mostly Motorsports. Steve, what'd you think about that All-Star race? There's been a lot of fodder going around about that race. What'd you think about it?
I've seen better, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I am extremely, generally speaking, pro what we have going on in NASCAR. I'm very excited about it. I'm pumped up about it. I'm a glasses overflowing person. I'm very positive about it. When I look at Texas, I think my positives are we had a really good truck race.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tyler Reddick won the Xfinity race. I think that's cool.
It puts you in a kind of a tough spot to talk about it. I know it does, right?
No, I'm not. I mean, it's just there was very little compelling about the race.
Yeah.
And then they compounded it by the mistake with the caution at the end to make it even worse.
Yeah.
That's just what I saw. You know, and as compelling as that race was, we need to be grateful, as far as action goes, that Kyle Busch had a flat tire.
Because
Kyle Busch was fixing the lead every lap of that race.
Right. He led 47 laps.
Yes, before the tire went down.
Right.
47 of 47.
Right.
I mean, maybe he didn't lead the first lap.
Right.
And that car was, he was fixing to wire that thing. Okay. You think it was lackluster as it was. Imagine that. And I really think the way, because that car, I had his pit area, that car was rolling. He told his crew, and which is part of the problem with this car at Texas, he told his crew, as long as I get the lead, I can control what everyone behind me does.
Right.
Because of the aerodynamics.
Yeah.
This car has worked really, really well in a lot of places. I'm scared to death at what it does at Texas, because it did not seem to work quite as well at Texas as it did at Darlington and Auto Club and the old worn out tracks. I don't know. So very lackluster, and they compounded the misery with the caution at the end. I'm glad that Ryan Blaney won the race. Would have been a major bigger headache had he not won the race. It's still a big headache. And Here's the All-Star race has a couple of issues, okay?
Yep.
In and of itself, it has kind of sort of ran its course. The other issue the All-Star race has is that the other exhibition race, the Busch Clash this year at the Coliseum, was a home run. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We've got this clash that we figured something out with it, and we figured a way to make this thing, to polish this thing up and make it work. What are we going to do with this All-Star race? I don't know what the answer is, but it wasn't what we had on Sunday night, that's for sure.
I don't think it needs to be at Texas again.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, I think that there's other places this thing could be, to whether we showcase the short tracks, whether we finally get Nashville half mile or North Wilkesboro up and running to do it or something. I think that there's a way to do this to make it work. I just to make it far more compelling than what it was.
I know that you probably did a post-race interview. I didn't get to hear it, Steve. I'm sorry. But Denny Hamlin was very vocal after that race. He felt that he got ripped off a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, Denny. I think Denny, and I don't always say this about Denny, I think Denny was very fair with this.
I do too.
He started the interview by saying Ryan Blaney was the just winner of that race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he should have won it before that caution came out. Okay, but this is where I think Denny is NASCAR's worst nightmare to finish second where we're at now. Okay, window net is a safety element of this car. Okay. Tires falling off the car is a safety issue of that car.
No doubt.
Last week, his crew chief lost an appeal to NASCAR about the safety violation of tires falling off the car.
Yep.
So if there is one person that a safety violation is fresh in the mind of, it's Denny Hamlin.
Mm-hmm.
And of all people to finish second, that was the worst scenario because Denny is like, he has a safety violation. The window net is down. He gets away with it. My crew chief has a safety violation, and I'm going the next 4 weeks without him.
Right.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
And you sit back and you say, he's right. That's the challenge. So, I think there's times Denny flies off, and I actually like Denny. I think Denny has become a very, very big, good part of this sport because he is opinionated and he shares it and he gets a lot of debate and a lot of dialogue, and maybe don't even agree with it. I think he does a good job with it. I really think that he laid out his case and presented it well with the qualification that the right man won this race. He should have won it before that caution came out at the end of the race, and we'd have been done with it. So Denny did a nice job with that.
Steve, you know as well as anybody, and, you know, I owned a couple ARCA cars, so I know how hard those window nets are to put back up.
Yeah.
If you just watch the crew members when they try to attach the hook, what they have to use both arms and shove that thing back up there to get that baby tight, because those window nets are really tight. I don't know how Ryan made that work and how he got away with it, or how, if he just monkeyed it up there and it held itself. I don't know exactly. Do you?
He monkeyed it up there and was able to get the front clip to clip, the front latch to clip.
Yeah.
The latch, to describe it to people that are not familiar, the latch is very comparable to your seatbelt latch.
Yep.
You know, where the small part of it is on the window net and the large part of it is mounted to the frame on the roof of the car. And he monkeyed around with the rear of it so that it freed up enough so that he could get the front of it latched. Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, so it was latched. The front of it was latched. The rear of it was not. But it was enough to, Scott Miller, NASCAR official, said he was swerving the car back and forth on the back stretch and the window net was not falling down. What are we going to do? So, you know,
but
they know as well as I do that he couldn't, you know, Ryan told me in Victory Lane, his left arm was killing him because he was trying to wedge that thing up in there.
Yeah. Well, the bad thing about it is if he would have had a wreck, that could have been a serious deal.
That was Denny's issue.
Yeah.
That was Denny's issue, is I'm racing him coming off from turn number two. He crowds me up into the wall, and we go down the backstretch sideways and bouncing off each other. That was Denny's issue. And this is where Denny presented it very, very well. We had a what-if situation that would not have been good.
Yeah.
He's right. Like a tire coming off a race car. Denny Hamlin's car came off. The tire came off at Dover. And the good news is it did not go up in the grandstand. But it was a what-if, and there's a penalty because of a what-if. Same scenario on the backstretch for Ryan Blaney with that. So that's why, of all people to finish second, Denny was the most interesting because of the recent events. And Denny is going to the Coca-Cola 600 this week without his crew chief, who is sitting out for 4 weeks because of a safety violation. So Denny, of all people, was in finished second. So it was interesting for sure.
You know, I posed this question earlier in the week here, Steve, and I want to ask you the same question. You know, we've got there's obvious that we have a tire issue in Cup, right? There's definitely a problem with these tires. I don't know what Goodyear's got to do to fix it, but what if a guy like Kyle Larson blows a right front, pounds the wall, gets seriously injured? He's the star of the sport and star of all of racing across America right now. What if a guy like him, or Chase Elliott, or a Kyle Busch gets hurt because of a tire blowing out and they're not able to race? What kind of predicament does that put NASCAR in?
A bad one.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott, it's like everything we have in our society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, face it. I don't want to go back to our first discussion about the kids in the school, but all we're going to do is argue one side versus the other, okay?
Right. Yeah.
That's a far more important issue than tires. But in NASCAR, when it comes to tires, we're going to say, well, the teams are pushing it too far. Where's the limits? The teams are pushing the limits. The Goodyear's building a perfectly good tire, and I'm with you. I don't know what the answer is, because already I had my analyst Todd Gordon on crew call this week said the teams are pushing it too far. Okay, have we found the limits? Okay, 15 minutes later, have an interview with Chad Knaus, competition director at Hendrick Motorsports. I, fresh in my mind, with Todd Gordon saying, pushing things to the limit, I said to Chad, how are we as far as pushing the elements like the tires to the limits? And Chad put the brakes on that conversation quickly, not in a negative way. Chad gives great interviews.
Right.
Chad said, I'm not sure it's pushing the issues or is it gremlins with the products.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Todd's saying the teams are pushing the issue with camber and air pressure. Chad is saying Goodyear needs to make a better tire. It's gremlins with the product.
Right.
We're already on two sides with this. We're already on two sides, and I don't know where we go. The problem is, what happens? Your point, what happens? when Kyle Larson is on the shelf for the playoffs.
Right.
That's where this gets bad, and I don't know what the answer is.
I'm wondering if NASCAR, gosh, I would hate to see this happen, right? Because a lot of secrets would get out if so. But should NASCAR go around and police the air pressures on these tires when they're on pit road? Before they go out, should there be a designated official checking the tires before they go out to make sure they have the proper air pressure in them? You think that would fix it?
It's tough to do on at the start of the race. You could probably do it on the start of a race, but how are you going to do it on pit stops? Because they can change it in 10 seconds.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
You got a point.
And do we need another layer? I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, we got more layers now of bureaucracy and management than we, you know. I'm with you though because it's a problem.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the solution is either, because already the two sides have been drawn on it.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Steve, tell us what you got going on this week on Wing Nation. I know it was yesterday, and you've already recorded it. I just watched it a little bit ago here on MAV TV. Tell us what you got going on this week and what's coming up.
Well, I'll tell you what's going on this week, but I do want to set the scene on that. I am on the campus of Richard Childress Racing.
Oh, you
right
are?
Now.
Wow.
Colleg Racing is doing an open house.
Mm.
And Scott, while I have been doing this interview, this has been the coolest thing in the world. And Richard Childress Racing has RCR's cars.
Yep.
They have Colleg's cars. They have our motorsports team, which is an Xfinity Series team Brett Moffat drives for. And they have the big machine team that Tyler Reddick won for. They are all here on the campus.
Hmm.
While I've been doing this interview, Sheldon Creed's Xfinity Series car, Landon Castle's Xfinity Series car, and the big machine Xfinity Series car have driven by the road right in front of my car, just driven right down the street.
How cool is that?
I don't know if they're headed to the engine shop. I don't know if they're headed to pit stop practice, because I don't know where anything is here. But I am sitting here. This is like I'm in heaven, and Colleg is doing an open house, and we have got probably 300 race fans out here enjoying this open house. It's race week in Charlotte, and it's really, really special that all these shops are open again. And so that's where I'm at. Now, to your Wing Nation question, this week on Wing Nation, it's all about the Weikert Memorial. We're going to Port Royal Saturday and Sunday, All-Star Circuit of Champions. And this week on Wing Nation, on the weekend show, we have Danny Dietrich, who drives the Weikert sponsored car. So a lot of Weikert Memorial talk, and they're good folks up there in Pennsylvania. So we're headed up that way for some sprint car racing this weekend.
Are you going to go to Millbridge again tonight to watch the Extreme Midget Series? And they're going to run the 600 micros again tonight, night number two. You can watch it all on Dirt Vision if you guys want to watch it. If you're a subscriber to Dirt Vision, it's going to be on there tonight. So they do a great job with their broadcast. Dirt Vision does.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they really do. No, I'll be out there tonight. So I've got Dirt Vision tonight, or I've got Micros and Midgets tonight.
Yep.
Friday night for MRN, we've got ARCA and Trucks at Charlotte. I jump on the plane Saturday morning, and Saturday and Sunday I've got 410 Sprint Cars, All-Star Circuit of Champions Sprint Cars at Port Royal. So I'm living right here, Scott. I've got some good, and I'm sitting in a parking lot with race cars driving by. So
yeah.
I'm roughing it this week. It's pretty rough around here.
You know, I've been saying it here for the last few weeks. I kind of wish I lived in Pennsylvania.
Oh God, dude!
Wouldn't that be?
I'd never get anything done.
Wouldn't that be heaven if you could live in Pennsylvania?
Yes, it would. Yes,
yeah.
It would.
Yeah.
It would be.
Yeah.
It would be.
Yeah.
I mean, I would. Yeah, I would. I don't know. The problem I have is I'd never get anything done, and I might have liver problems. That might be the only problem.
Yeah. Right. 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 Well, Steve, we always appreciate you taking the time to join us here on Mostly Motorsports. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday. Thanks so much for coming on the show, bud.
You got it, Scott. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you. There you have it, Steve Post. What'd you get out of that conversation, Austin? Did you pull anything out of that? Did you learn anything from that conversation? No?
Well, you always learn something.
Yeah.
While you guys were talking, I was back here watching the All-Star Race highlights, and I didn't realize, I'll try and pull it up again real quick, that Blaney's window net was down on the last restart. Like, it was up under yellow, but then it had fallen down.
Before he got back to the start-finish line?
Well, after he took the green. Let me get it pulled up here real
All
quick.
Right. Okay. We'll let Austin pull up some video. He's always good at getting that stuff pulled up so we can watch it here on Racing Boys. And, again, You know, it's kind of funny. Kirk and I did all these broadcasts all those years, and it's just so funny that I never go out of town, but I'm going to go this weekend to Lake Ozark Speedway. Our good friends down at Osage National, we're going to stay at their complex this weekend. I'm looking forward to getting down there. I know Kirk's going to be going to the Show Me 100 on Saturday night as well. He'll be getting some sound down there. So we'll have all of the lake covered this weekend. All right.
All right, take a shot at that. That's overtime with two laps to go entering turn two.
Is he at full speed right here?
This is after they took the green on the final restart in overtime.
And that's a picture of him at speed on the final lap?
Watch. I'll replay I'll back up the video here. So this is under yellow, coming to green for overtime.
Right.
We go into turn one. The camera will switch to an up-close shot, and boom, right
there.
Oh,
my gosh, that window net was down. Holy cow. Wow. That's dangerous.
I didn't realize that. I looked over as we were talking, or you guys were talking. I'm like, whoa, that's not...
You know what? As much as I hate to say this, he probably should get a penalty for that, right? Or not? He won the race. Should he get a penalty for it? Austin, yes or no?
Well, that kind of goes back to...
Should NASCAR allow him to come down on pit road and put that window net back
in? It's NASCAR not following their typical rules. It's the All-Star race, so I guess you can kind of make up whatever you want to go, and I guess we can have to make the race finish under green. So, I mean, it's more on NASCAR's fault than anything else. And, I mean, yes, as a driver, you made the decision to pull it, and you should know what the rules are. But if the rules weren't stated and you guys didn't know what was going on, then that was on NASCAR's fault.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, thanks, folks, for tuning in to the show today. Tomorrow we're going to have Danny Lorton on. He is the general manager of Lucas Oil Speedway. We're going to talk about the Show Me 100 that's going to take place this weekend. Thursday night, it's the Cowboy Classic. Yeah. Kirk over there freaking out on me. I was looking at him like, I got it, Kirk. I already did the read. You weren't listening, were you? Did you not listen to me do the read? Okay. So Kirk's going to have the Show Me 100 covered this weekend. I'm going to go down to the lake and watch some sprint car race, and I can't wait to go. Austin, you're going to run down there, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, somebody asked a little bit ago, I don't know who it was, I'll go back here, but somebody asked if you were going to run the 305 race out at I-70 Speedway. You don't have a 305.
Don't have it, and that's this weekend, and I'm already committed to my 360.
Oh, is the 305 Nationals out there this weekend?
Yep, and no, I'll be at I-70 June 24th and 25th with the ASCS National Tour.
You think that will hurt? You think the 305 Nationals at I-70 is going to hurt the lake?
No.
No.
Are you meaning car count or fan count?
No, fan count.
I'll be honest. The 305 racers don't get mad at me.
All right. It's not.
Nobody's going to go watch that. Nobody.
You don't think so?
No.
You don't think they'll have a crowd out there?
No, they didn't have a crowd last year.
Oh, they didn't?
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they don't.
I'm a little worried about I-70, a little bit.
There's some races that'll pull a big crowd. The Lucas Oil Late Models will, but
they'll pull
the 305 National doesn't. They don't have the big pull of the Outlaws. I mean, nobody has the pull Outlaws.
They didn't have a stellar crowd out there for the USAC non-wing sprint cars either.
I mean, nobody's going to skip out on watching ASCS and Power Eye Midgets and whatever else they got going on down at the lake, or even super late models at Lucas Oil to go watch 305s, unless you're in Odessa or associated with the series.
Yeah. All right, again, folks, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the show. Don't forget to get up and visit the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. The Ascot Park Tribute is up there. It's going to go through October 1st, so get up there. And when you show up, if you run into Bob Baker, make sure you tell him the Racing Boys sent you. For Austin O'Neill, for my partner Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor. We'll see you tomorrow at 12 noon Central Time right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding mucus fuel treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Mucus fuel treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Cigarport.ca is your go-to online store for exclusive cigars produced from the best quality tobacco in the world.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.